the struggle of always trying to do to be productive every single day, we just don't realize how important it is to just not, to just fucking forget about work and then just enjoy life.
Hi,
Hi.
I'm Austin Wintery,
I'm Angela Bermudez.
and this is Brushes and Keys, and this is a weird one.
It's not a weird word. Okay, it's
It's a,
already weird.
yeah, it's this is a remote, actually, this is like a on location, or
Yeah, I wouldn't call this weird. I will call this,
travelogue episode.
yes, a different one and a less fancy, I guess, less equipment.
We're not in our multi-million-dollar recording
Yeah,
studio like
so
normal.
yeah, we actually you guys probably don't know this, but I record from home and Austin on his studio, so we do this separately, and so it's easier for me to edit and like put the voices and separate the volumes, etc.
Yeah. In other words, despite living together, it's always done in a Zoom call.
Exactly.
It is definitely way easier from an audio mixing standpoint.
Yeah. So this time we just have the one microphone.
Caution to the wind. We're
We're
huddled around a single mic in more or less a log cabin
Yeah.
in Big Bear Lake, a few hours outside of
Which
LA.
is totally worth it.
Yeah, it was just a quick little weekend getaway apropos of nothing. Just a, hey, do you want to? I mean, we talked about coming here for years, and
It's been for me. I haven't slept outside my bed, outside my room, for 3 years.
no, two and
Two and
change.
change,
Basically,
almost 3 years
no,
before the
yeah,
pandemic.
but that was barely more than 2 years.
Don't even know anymore.
It was March, February or March of 2020
Right.
was when we went to PAX. In Boston, and that was the last trip.
Yeah.
And
My last trip, you've been traveling forever, every day.
every well, the first my first trip was ironically in American political terms, it was January 6th. That was my first time. Well, actually, wasn't it was January 5th, I guess. But I was recording Aliens Fireteam in Nashville on January 6th, so when all the chaos was happening at the Capitol building, I was totally blissfully unaware, recording for hours and hours straight, and I had my phone off, and we recorded for literally about 11 hours, and then we finished, and by the time I looked at my phone, the whole thing was over. So it was like by the time I even knew what had, I in other words, I didn't follow it in real time, which is, I think, was far more sort of emotionally involved for people because they didn't know what the outcome was going to be. But by the time I knew about it, I already knew that the outcome was, not as big a deal as it could have been. It could have been a huge disaster. That was my first trip away, though. That was a very funny, like after the pandemic had been going strong for a good while,
Yeah.
it was just light enough.
But you've been traveling, yes, a lot, but only for work, like never like this until this time. It's been 2 years and something.
Yeah, in fact, the
No,
last.
actually, the last time in PAX, that was work anyway.
Well, I mean, this is where it's always murky for me because my job is my dream job. So, like, travel related for it is often not some, like,
Yeah,
drudgery.
it's always pleasure.
Yeah, it's always fun, like Thailand or traveling for, like, PAX was visiting to do the show with Darren,
Ah, yeah.
it's
Oh,
like
that was
pure
so
joy.
good. Yes,
You know
yes.
what I mean?
Oh, so good, yeah.
Yeah, so it's and you and that was also the same one where you cosplayed the Pathless.
Yeah, I think was that the first time I cosplayed in the US as a like the after I moved here? I think that was the first time.
Possibly because you didn't in the end for Comic-Con.
Yeah,
And that was the that was before that by maybe 6, 7 months.
No, wait. No, yeah, I think I did something for Anime Expo, but it's not even Like, it was so short. I didn't even...
Well, and this was cool because you were kind of like the official cosplayer. You
right,
were,
right.
They had a whole huge, amazing booth, and this was the first publicly playable...
Yeah.
That
was cool.
You know, like, unveiling of the game, and you were wandering around outside the booth, and you had made this eagle...
Yeah.
Out of foam and feathers, and not one person would walk past and fail to do this gasping double take.
They had to look back. They were walking by, and they had to like stare a little to make sure that that wasn't a live creature.
Real eagle. Yeah, it looked really, really realistic, and you had detached the head, and there was like a spring.
Yeah, like a bubble head, basically. Yeah,
like a bobble head. Mm-hmm. I never thought of it like that, but yeah, you're right. So it made it look... It wasn't stiff like a
right.
like a plastic mm-hmm. toy.
Like, I wanted to make it like with, you know, like I could open its wings like a puppet. But yeah, time.
I mean, it was probably better this way because that would have been sort of like mechanically more impressive, but less realistic.
Right, that's true.
Probably.
Yeah.
Because the wing movement, if mm-hmm. that's not lifelike, it's instantly
obvious. You know what
obvious.
Could have been more interesting? Just to put it like one of those... eye cover for birds. I don't know how they call, but like you cover and they look
like for the falconer type.
Yeah, those
like
some
shield mm-hmm, goggle things.
Like with the strap around it.
Just for the illusion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that would have been so good. Yeah. But yes, in any case, I think the last prior to that, which again, these were all work trips, but prior to that, I think the last actual vacation that I can think of was when we went to the Tabacón,
in Costa Rica.
In Costa Rica, uh-huh. The thermal hot springs like resort on the at the base of a volcano, and there's you know, the geothermal activity creates these natural hot springs, and they're all over, so there's like 10 hotels that all
right.
brag about having natural hot springs all next to each other.
Yeah.
And so you can go and just sit in like this river that's like 80 degree water.
I know, it's so
90 degree water. It's pretty yeah. amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an actual like, we are here to relax, to do nothing. We rented a car. This place is hours outside of San Jose, so we, mm-hmm. you know, we just rent a car and drive.
Mm-hmm.
And go through the countryside and
yeah.
did like...
I guess it's what we're doing right now here.
Yeah, which was... I mean, all of which is to say this isn't actually random tangent. The idea for our kind of conversation today was we spend all of our episodes mostly talking about work, essentially. The work of an artist, the work of a composer, and our thoughts mm-hmm. on everything. And not so much about... One of the ways people derive inspiration is by recharging their batteries.
Yeah.
And I certainly see...
I keep thinking of the moment we arrived at like all these lovely views of my surroundings. Like, that could be a nice painting. That could be a nice, you know, portrayal of, you know, the area. And I keep looking for, like, the tiniest details. I keep taking photos around me and just... First off, to not forget what this trip was. Because I am, you know, my mind, I just forget everything. And I like taking photos of everything just because it's nice. It's nice to have it, the memory. And
this is a really pretty... I mean, this is pretty. This is a really... Like, people come here from around the world. We're very spoiled to have this be...
Man.
2.5 hours drive.
Seriously, how come we didn't do this before? It's yeah. Anyway, we're doing it, and I'm so happy I'm here. Like, we're in this cabin. Canvas is sleeping next to us. She's super tired already because it's been a long day.
And this place, by dumb luck, there's a big yard outside this cabin that wraps around the whole house. And it's all fenced in, and... So we just leave her outside.
She's so happy.
She doesn't have a lifestyle like that. Yeah. We have a bit more of an urban lifestyle mm-hmm. back in LA. And so she, we take her out a lot on leashes into parks and whatever, but this is like her first real experience of just more or less continuously just running around. Yes. And so she has exhausted the crap out of herself. She's so not built
it.
For.
Yeah, I love it. And the best part is the lake is right out there. Like I can see through the window and it's right there. And
could almost throw a rock to the water. Like we're, it's a 1 minute walk to the water.
Yeah. And of course I've taken a lot of photos already and I hope I get to share them with you guys, but it's very nice. It's something that everybody should do and so needed for artists, especially because we just, well, obviously I'm just speaking from my experience, but the struggle of always trying to do, to be productive every single day, we just don't realize how important it is to just not, to just fucking forget about work and then just enjoy life.
So yeah, there's sort of two different threads there, because you mentioned taking these photos and immediately everywhere it's so picturesque and it's like one natural landscape that's sort of breathtaking after another. And so on the one hand, there's the inspiration in the obvious, I went somewhere new, I saw things that I found beautiful and I want to capture that, right? Like that's sort of, but also what you just said to me is the sort of the part that I have trouble with. This has always been one of my weaknesses, is forcing myself to not, it, in a way it's the opposite of the first one. You know, I'm here, I'm seeing all this artistic potential, blah, blah, blah. But there's also merit, I think, in I'm going to try to force myself to not think like that, to just be present and enjoy the moment. And sort of like there've been times over the last day and change here where I was sitting on the couch and like normally it might be in my instinct to check to look at my emails or whatever. There's it kind of never stops. But instead I just kind of put my phone in my pocket and went outside and there's this like this little football that's like a chew toy. And so just like throwing it around with canvas instead, you know, and just kind of, and it sounds so like plain and simple and ordinary.
I
and
know.
Most people hear that and they're like, that's just called a Saturday.
I know.
But this is where, you know, as somebody who has always worked, you know, 7 days a week and been happy about that and been like that, I don't apologize for that. I like my work. I'm lucky to do a thing and to pay the bills and live, you know, reasonably comfortably doing a thing I want to do and doing very little of stuff I don't want to do. And so if the trade-off of that is working 7 days a week and rarely taking vacations, that has always felt like a fair trade-off. And but I underestimated how valuable it is to periodically just go, you know what? I'm gonna, you know, just try to truly shut it all off.
Yeah.
And because here's the thing, as I think about this now, right in this moment, I think I always used to think, if I truly love it, I'll never want to stop. And it's like a sign, it's like a warning sign that maybe I'm getting jaded or I'm getting bitter or I'm getting burned out if I feel the need to kind of push it back and go, no, this week is just about la, 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 la. So I think I had like a complex about this notion of taking time away as a choice, you know. It's like, what, do you not love your work anymore? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, it took me a while to go, actually, first off, you can love a thing and still take a pause. Like that doesn't, you know, like I can think sushi is the greatest food ever and not necessarily want to eat it every single day. Like, okay. But also, ironically, it has taken me most of my adulthood to really appreciate is I'm actually a better composer by periodically kind of separating and just having a life experience that is totally disconnected from this. And that this trip to Costa Rica was one of the biggest in that vein that I've taken in this decade. I mean, it was literally, we go there, we rented a car, we went to coffee plantation and made our own cups of coffee.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
You were so happy. That was like your...
I know.
Your, I don't know how to call it, like your bubble, your perfection, your your peak of happiness.
Yeah, my sort of apex moment. It was awesome. We literally made a cup of coffee ourselves. We roasted. Yeah. They, you know, they give you the beans. They show you how they're grown, and then they you roast it yourself in this giant kiln thing, kind of a, like a grill almost. And then grill is really not the right word, but it's like big sort of oven. And then grind it.
Yeah, and also with chocolate, we saw like the seeds and all the process. It was fun.
Yeah, that was that was actually a mind-blowing experience because I never realized how like what the chocolate, the cacao fruit looks like.
It's so white and
like fleshy.
It's like musk.
It was like a brain. I mean, it did, or like, you know, like a kiwi, if that was white, like that texture, like very fruit pulpy.
So weird.
And
it smells so sweet. But yeah, it's a very fruity, not at all what we are used to.
And absolutely nothing like chocolate until it burns. Yeah. I remember they said the rumor or like the sort of, you know, the wives' tale is that chocolate was essentially discovered when someone accidentally dropped one of those in a fire.
Yeah, I was going to say, what was the beginning of that? Because it passes through a process that is just not, that's just dumb luck, you know, to just discover this thing can transform to this deliciousness.
Well, and it's even then, the raw kind of pure cacao.
That's true. That's like, I don't
bitter.
Like it.
Yeah, it's extremely. And one of the things that was cool about that was when we would make our own chocolate, we added things very different from just like milk or sugar or whatever to make the chocolate that you find in a chocolate bar. Like they gave us, remember they give like orange citric, like almost like orange juice, like pure squeezed orange, and mix that with the chocolate as the source of sweetness it's overtly tanged with orange.
Yeah.
It's sweet in a way that's very different from just piles of sugar, you know? And I remember that and where they you mash it and, but this is all the kind of stuff where, you know,
it's so unrelated to anything, but so refreshing and so helpful for your brain and your mind and your process, you know, your at the end, your work.
Yeah. Oh no, you come back. I mean, again, of all the things we ever end up talking about on this, most people will probably be going, way to understand a thing that all the rest of us have known our whole life. And I can't overstate how, like, I really just, you know, it was a double blind spot for me having this complex about like this, the seeming weakness of taking off time, but then also that I travel a lot and always enjoyed it, you know, and there was always extra time, you know, like after the LSO recording, for the Traveler Symphony album, you know, there were a few days built into the trip to just enjoy London. It turns out because of COVID, I was quarantined in my hotel room for the entirety. It literally didn't leave my hotel, despite the fact that I never ended up testing positive, and I don't think I had it, but my compatriot Andrea Pacino got it, and I had been drinking from his glass that night. We shared dinner, and he goes, "Try my drink." And then like 2 seconds later, he's like, "Man, I'm so tired."
Yeah.
So it was like, I basically drank COVID and still somehow didn't get it. But I was so worried. And that I was also like, fuck, well, I'm going to get it. I'm going to go out into London and then I'm going to catch it. And then I'll be stuck here. And
yeah, you guys.
So it kind of got.
But yeah, for the record, these two are like BFFs. Like it's just, Austin just doesn't drink of any, like, random people, even if you know him for a long time. He with Andrea, they're, like, inseparable. So, yeah, this was special.
It was also, yeah, I guess I quarantined out of support.
I know, because they didn't ask you to do it, right? It was just something you decided to do because he was locked
down. I mean, he was literally the next hotel room over, coughing and feeling pretty sick.
Were you just passing messages below the door?
No, but we were texting basically throughout the day. Like, how was this hour for you? Same, staring at the wall. I binged through the rest of The Expanse. That was my and I played XCOM and watched a lot of Drew Gooden on YouTube.
Yeah.
And in any case, so that was one where, like, that was a work trip, theoretically speaking.
Yeah. It was not supposed to be only that, but yeah.
But that's how a lot of my work trips are. So I get there's a little bit of a loophole.
Yeah.
Where I go, you know, okay, this trip is for work, but there is, you know, an afternoon or a day or whatever that's sort of going to be kind of like padding where I can also just go have a nice dinner. Or another perfect example, I remember when Susie and I flew to Nashville to record Abzu, the violinist Sandy Cameron, by total coincidence, was in Nashville that night performing with the San Diego, Seattle? Nashville.
No, I don't know anymore.
I don't remember 2 seconds ago.
Oh my God.
In Nashville, recording Abzu, the Nashville Symphony and Chris Bode was doing a show together, and Sandy tours with him fairly regularly and was then. So we literally recorded, we landed late at night, the next morning, first thing, record the orchestra all day long, and then went, had a great barbecue dinner downtown Nashville on Broadway, and then walked another 5 feet to the, what's it called? The Skirmerhorn, I think is the name of their concert hall, and saw the Nashville Symphony and Chris Bode and Sandy do their show.
Yeah.
And then went back to the hotel, went to bed, woke up, and flew to London to record the choir and all the harps.
Amazing.
It was a super crazy weekend, and it was one of those where if we miss like one flight, the whole thing falls apart.
Wow, yeah.
But
sure.
That's a perfect example where like going to see a show in a trip that we had like one extra hour, and so we spent it on a show, you know?
Wow.
So it's not like
risky.
Well, no, I mean, it's not like we were going to... No, it's not like that. I mean, it was like, it was that night. We were done for the day. Oh, my point is like, we filled the non-working hours with something fun. That's normal. So I'm just trying to be realistic in my portrayal that it's not like work. If you look away, like, remember The Office where every time Dwight like blinks, Jim has the timer.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're not working. I saw that, you know, you checked email for 13 seconds. Yep. That's, you know, like, that's wage theft. So it's not like that. It's not like work so hard, never stop, never blink.
Yeah, I know.
But still, this trip has zero work justification.
Zero work. I mean, you've been kind of like looking at your emails like here and there.
I mean,
I'm not trying to be your Dwight here, but I've seen you.
You mean the gym?
The gym, yes.
I honestly have probably, I have probably looked at my email 4 times. I mean, I actually have barely looked.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
And it's
that's
mostly
fair.
Just to clean out the shit that I know. Like, I get all these things I don't need. I drank water and I'm still learning how, apparently.
Oh, good. Go ahead, I can cut this.
Never. This is a real life. I'm very proud that you kept the thing that I...
You didn't even check!
Except that I got the messages that I told people.
Yes, but you should check. You're so, like, seriously. Fucking support your own shit.
I spot check.
Okay.
I always go and, you know, listen for 20 seconds, skip ahead 10 minutes, just to make sure it's all good. I can't listen to the sound of my own voice. I hate it. So please. It's torture to go back. And
oh, come on.
It's true.
Well...
All the podcasts and the YouTube, the behind-the-scenes videos I make, when I'm having to edit those and work with Dallas, it's like torture because I'm like, I just want to do a new take and not sound like an idiot. I'm very harsh.
Oh, yeah, you are, for sure. Yeah, no.
That's not uncommon for people to feel that. So anyway, yes. So you don't have to cut anything in this one, and I appreciate that you kept it.
We'll see.
Fun trivia about Big Bear Lake. This is one of those places. It's kind of like Aspen or Vail, or, you know, it's sort of a ski town in the winter and nice, like biking and hiking and all that stuff in the summer. And it's also a town. I actually looked it up. It's just over 5,000 people who live here, but in peak tourism, it's probably like quadruple that. 'Cause every cabin is a rental. Like, I even saw a sign in front of one of the houses that said, good neighbors need neighbors, where they were actually, I think, trying to petition the local government to put a cap on how many cabins are available for rental so that people actually live here and there's space. Because all these homes are not for sale.
I honestly think I understand them. Like, if I lived here and every week or every month there's new people and, you know, different vibes and stuff, that would be very annoying.
Not just that, but tourists come through, they make a mess, and they leave. Like even just quality of life.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
It's like, imagine living in Cozumel or Cancun or Tijuana, actually living there, where it's just a constant parade of people who are tourists coming through, and they go and they drink and they puke on the sidewalk and then they leave.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like your job to clean that shit. You know, it's so I understand.
Of course.
If you live in a very tourist driven area, it probably gets super old.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, who are they kidding? This is a beautiful place.
It is.
And the economy, what else is there here other
than
tourism?
That is true. That is true.
It's not like they also have like a gold mine that's worth $1 billion or something.
Yeah, all of the businesses work for the tourists, basically. Mm-hmm. This is it.
Yeah, and it's really lovely. And another trivia, what I was going to say was that our dear friend Troy, one of the... he's kind of who I credit.
That's what I was trying to do here, like with taking all these photos and videos and just having all the material I can, all the visual I can, so I don't forget anything, just in case I feel like doing something, you know, painting something. I would love to paint something actually right now, you know, just get out and put my canvas and start doing something. But because we're leaving tomorrow, I don't know if it's possible to do that. But anyway, I think like my way of taking these trips is to not to milk it, but to take advantage of the beauty so I can work inspired by it. Which is the opposite of what you were saying. Like, you just don't want to...
Like the lazy vacation where you do
exactly.
nothing.
Exactly. So it is supposed to... Yes, it is a lazy vacation. But...
I haven't been lazy, for the record. We've been on the move nonstop. I mean, we've...
Because there's so much to see. But this is all... yes, we're just enjoying, and I'm taking 100 pictures thinking about work. But it's not work at the end. It is all joy
and
inspiration.
And that one's kind of a gray area to me because it's not like the trip wouldn't have been worth it if you decide to never make a painting.
For sure.
Like, so that's kind of like, in the same way that composers throughout history have written music inspired by, like, you know, Ferdi Goffey and the Grand Canyon Suite or like the Dvorak New World Symphony or the Smetana de Moldau, which is about a particular river. People have been inspired by the natural environment.
Of course.
And like great landmarks and things. There's endless examples of composers doing this kind of thing. I could keep naming endless examples. But the point being, like, if I don't get inspired to write some music from this location, it is clearly still worth having been
absolutely
here.
Yes, so, because your mind is set for this. You're not expecting to have a piece done after this trip, which is great.
Yeah, exactly.
Not like Troy that you were gonna talk about.
Yeah, it was just trivia that I associate with Big Bear, where, you know, this place was never really on my radar. Because California, Southern California in particular, there's a million, you know, Lake Ojai and Arrowhead and Palm Desert for the opposite kind of ecosystem, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's a million places that if you talk to people who live in LA, they want to kind of escape for the weekend. There's a lot of places people go. Because there's a million great options. That's just one of those really spoiling, lucky things about living in California. And so Big Bear is just one of a big list. It never stood out to me as like, mm-hmm, it's the place. But I remember in the earliest days of getting to know Troy, in fact, the very first time we hung out was at the studio of Rob King, who's a composer and mixer, and who incidentally wrote the music to the original EverQuest, which is like... you know, a game I played the absolute bejesus out of when it first came out. So much so that I had to stop and I was like, I can't ever play MMOs again. It was like being a drug addict.
Been there.
Yeah, so Rob has done a handful of games. He's also mixed a lot of records and things like that. And so Troy was wrapping up this album. This was very shortly after that kind of crazy whirlwind year when Bioshock Infinite and The Last of Us came out, and he was kind of king of the world. And he invited me over. He was like, hey, you know, we just met. We met through Twitter. We were sending cat photos to each other. And then it was like, you want
to... I think like probably 90% of the people in the internet, they've done that. Yeah, that's how they meet cats.
I know. Yeah. I don't remember where and it now, started now either.
That everybody's so crazy. I'm just going to shout out that cat game, Stray, that everybody's playing.
Yeah, neither of us.
Yeah, I was kind of like poking you to bring it here and just play here. But yeah, we better just enjoy the outside views.
Believe me, if my Steam Deck had come, that would have been on the table. But I pre-ordered it later than everyone else. So yeah. Mine hasn't come yet. But in any case, yeah, that game does look pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
I remember he invited me over to hear they were working on mixes for this album, and he was telling me about, you know, we recorded, you know, some brass for this, and Paul Cartwright did violins on that, and blah, blah, blah. He was very excited. And it's funny, I knew him as an actor. I had no idea he was such a music nerd and a gear nerd. He knew every piece of gear seemingly that Rob owned and understood it well. And so it was kind of this crash course in who he is, mm-hmm. like a truer view of his identity. And as it turned out, not quite a year earlier, the way they had recorded the initial kind of, I think they even wrote and recorded the kind of the core of those songs, was that he and this band rented a huge cabin, drove up to Big Bear, and just set up their gear like in the living room of some like 4 or 5 bedroom cabin or something like that.
Amazing.
And just made music for like a week or something. Yeah. I'm probably getting the details wrong, but I just remember he described it, and that and it actually came up. He recently was explaining the specific engineer that had like built a recording studio out of a house.
Wow.
That he had heard about. And that's like kind of what inspired that idea. I never knew the origin of what inspired it, but he made it sound so cool. And like mm-hmm. this creative little retreat mm-hmm. to go up to Big Bear and, you know, make music for a week. And I was like, and it's just a couple hours away. I felt like such this naive, you know, wow, that's like yeah. so magical. It's like, he may as well have gone in the cupboard into Narnia.
Yeah.
And
do they do that in the winter?
That's a great question. Probably not. I don't know. I don't know why.
The music feels very, you know, very, I was going to say dark, but it's not dark. It's like for winter. I don't know how to explain. It's definitely not happy music.
I mean, it's called Sitting in the Fire is the name of the album. it's an, you know, it's like alternative. It's probably happy in the, like, I don't know, like the Beach Boys sense. Yeah, it's not that.
Yeah, exactly. It's not summer music.
No, that's true. But mm-hmm. but ever since he told me about that, Big Bear kind of took on a sort of like mythic quality for me. And
so after you heard about this place, you visited here.
I only visited one time, very briefly.
But it was all because of Troy. Like, you did it.
He's the one who planted that seed and made me realize, oh, that's a viable thing. I should check it out.
And then
I remember starting to tell you about it.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, yeah, we should do that someday. And yeah, you periodically mention it, like, you know, it could be a good thing to do sometime. And then
yeah, you know how it is.
A few months ago, I just kind of went online to the, you know, there's a few different companies that manage the rental cabins here. And I just went on one and I just went, that one looks good. And just kind of did it. Didn't even tell you.
That is so crazy. The most amazing thing is that this cabin has the backyard locked for dogs. It's just perfect for
kids. Which I did not know when I
It's just a big surprise. And
we look around at other cabins, almost none have that.
Yes, I was picturing that.
Yep.
So yeah, we got super lucky. The moment I arrived here, I was like, Jesus Christ, this is... I don't know if I'm going to leave.
Mm-hmm, yeah, this might be our house now.
I know.
Yeah, it was a shock that it was that perfect for... Yeah. Canvas. And the funny thing was, though, I booked it And then like a week later, maybe even less, a couple days later, the Bob Townsend announced this Basil Poledouris concert at Disney Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And Basil Poledouris was a very important composer for me when I was growing up. And he died young when I was in college. I never got to meet him.
Yeah.
And I'd never, that I can recall, I've never heard his music live in concert. And this was going to be Disney Hall. It was the christening of a brand new orchestra that Stephen Allen Fox started, who I've worked with many times. Wonderful guy. Called the LA Film Orchestra. So I looked, and it was literally like that day that I had booked our cabin for was the concert. So I had to call the company pretty immediately and go, can I just slide the whole thing back 24 hours? Because I really want to go to this concert. So we did both. It was very nice.
I felt like a heartache that moment. Like I was in my kitchen and suddenly I felt like,
ugh! Like a sixth sense of...
Yeah.
In fact, the funny thing is I'm working on a project right now where I had a meeting last week and I sent some material to the team. I can't really say much about this, but I can say that one of the guys on the team is originally from France, and we have a deadline coming up at the end of this coming week, and he had some feedback on the material that I sent just before this trip. And so I said, hey, I'll get you some revisions, but it's going to have to come. I'm actually going to be away this weekend on a vacation. I hope that's not going to cause any stress for you, because I won't be able to work on this revision until I'm back. And it's like, this is the kind of thing that it took me a long time to even be able to say a sentence like that. Like, yeah. You know, I would always, in fact, I've canceled vacations before when I realized, oh, I have work I need to do. And I always lived in a very... It's weird because on the surface, it's like very selfless, but it's actually in a weird way, it's actually the opposite. It's kind of selfish. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you know, like no enjoyment or, and never mind like the benefits to somebody in my life like you. It was always very single-minded. So I told him, you know, hey, just, you know, I'm not going to be available to touch this until kind of the last second because I'm going to be away. And he goes, look at me, man. I'm French. I'm practically a communist. We take vacations every 3 weeks. Like,
oh, wow.
He was like, please go enjoy. Like, wow. It was hilarious. It was so the opposite of like all these years I had all these fears.
Yeah.
And this guy, and then the hilarious thing was, I was like, hey, so when I can call you on Thursday or whatever. And he was like, oh, I'm going to be on holiday.
Oh, wow.
It was okay. So I was like, how perfect. That's too hilarious.
That is so funny. See,
but it's true.
You should learn more about other cultures.
Well, and the game industry has a whole push. I mean, right now there's people advocating for 4-day work weeks, for shorter work days, for, you know, lots of like unlimited, you know, work from home days off or things like that. I mean, mm-hmm. different people have different feelings on this. Yeah. I tend to be an unapologetic workaholic, though I don't expect other people to be wired the same.
Uh-huh.
I also recognize some people might not love their job as much as I love my job. And so, mm-hmm. like, it's okay to put limits on it. That's all well and good. I'm not here to advocate you should work 7 days a week or anything less makes you a failure.
Yeah.
But there's no question that right now there's a lot of pressure on the game industry to the point of people trying to make my style almost like a taboo. Like I should feel ashamed that I want to work that hard. And that is where I draw the line. And I go, no, look, you do you. And also if you are the head of a company and you doing you means these are the, like Mike Bithell, these are the rules I want to set. I want my people to be able to take that time off. Yeah. I want there to be a policy that's very favorable to the employees in this sort of way. Like, that's him in his leadership role doing what he thinks is best. And I operate differently. Of course, I don't have, you know, 10 or whatever employees the way he does. So, mm-hmm. you know, he has to calculate it differently.
Right.
But point being, you know, as I like dip my toe in a vacation and I'm like, oh, I'm so proud of myself. I know.
I took a day off. Even your agent is like, what?
I know. Yeah. My agent, Sarah, saw my Instagram stories and was like, wait. Are you like not in the studio right now? What the fuck? She recognizes this is extremely uncommon.
Yep.
And it's something I think, yeah, artists in particular, it's hard because, you know, especially as a freelancer, every minute that you're not hustling.
Exactly. That is the pressure that I was mentioning before. Just the fact that you're not being productive. The fact that I feel bad if I want to go play a game that I'm not gonna, you know, whatever you were mentioning, what, like water, power water or something.
Oh, the power washer.
Yeah. And I'm like, but I'm not gonna learn anything. This doesn't have a story. It doesn't.
Actually, I don't know that for a fact. It might, but what made me laugh about your reaction to that was when I said, because you take such, you're such a like OCD, you know, you love like cleaning, like you get things so perfect and you do a great job. I mean, in fairness, it pays off. You're not like OCD, but you are also like, you have like bad eyesight or something. You actually get stuff really immaculately clean, and it like bothers you when things are not like orderly and you know. So to me, I was like, oh, this is like this game. You're so wired for this, like the satisfaction of something being immaculately clean. But what made me laugh was you were like, yeah, but it's not real. Like you need the actual satisfaction.
Give me the power washer. Now we're talking.
Yeah. But no, I get it. You.
And by the way, I don't want to, don't make it sound like that because I'm not a freak. I just like.
There's nothing things. Freak about being what? OCD. Or?
I don't know. Just want to be clear that I like things organized because that affects my productivity as well. Like my inspiration. And also if I'm in a messy room, I won't feel as inspired. And that is part of my process. Also, what's the word I'm looking for? When you do things just because you're avoiding something else.
Oh yeah, like procrastinating. Stalling. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I normally also that affects me sometimes, and what I do, clean.
You clean to avoid working.
Uh-huh.
And you tell yourself, no, this is so that the room is clean and I'll be more inspired. I remember once a friend of mine saying that I don't remember if this was just his kind of conjecture or if there was actual kind of, you know, scientific studies that were trying to gauge this, but he had made some comment about when you have a clean environment, there's less essentially background noise in your head.
Exactly.
As you walk through, if there's like a pile of books over there, you might have this thing in the back of your mind goes, I really should put those on bookshelves.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the pile of unopened mail, I wonder if there's an important bill in there or whatever. So even if you walk past it and you ignore it,
yeah,
there's this thing that interrupts your brain for exactly. a split second. Mm-hmm. And so if you're in a messy environment, there's thousands of those in all directions.
Yep.
Everything in the room. And I do think there might be something to that where I've sat down. For example, I make sticky notes that I leave all over my desk. And I'll go, oh, you know, I'm finishing a project, but I'm also starting a new project. So I'm like, today I'm going to focus on the one that's almost done, but I have to leave a reminder to myself. And so I'll put a sticky note with something about the new project and I'll put mm-hmm. it right in front of my face.
Yeah.
So that I remember it. But there have been times where that sticky note staring at me becomes so overwhelming that I actually stop the thing mm-hmm. that's due soon and work on the other thing because I can't shut it off. And I go, oh, you know, I'm trying to work on this.
The problem is that you have so many sticky notes all around. It looks like a mystery.
I know. It's like a murder mystery. Uh-huh. Like a beautiful mind. Yeah, yeah. No, it's true.
Or
it's
your desk and your computer.
And sometimes they get old, you know, and then I'll look at them and it'll be like...
like coffee stains. And.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I use them as coasters too.
Oh, no.
Every now and again, like I'll...
have coasters. You have like four.
Yeah, but then I'll be like, no, but those are nice. I don't want to ruin them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. It's so... I'm a semi-functional person. Just leave me alone. And anyway, point being, that ambient noise can be very difficult to tame when your mind is going a lot. And I'm always thinking of a million things. I mean, it's challenging. I'll be thinking of the projects I'm working on. I'll be thinking about things like this, you know, or things that are not technically front and center of my work, but which interest me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll be thinking about like, oh, you know, I when I was a kid, I wanted to write a novel. I wonder if I could still write a novel. Wow. Like it'll end up, mm-hmm. or I'll think, you know, I want to, what if I were to start a, you know, like a new touring, like a company that tours a video game concert series, or like, or it could be interesting. I want to make an album. I have an idea for an album.
There's so many. Yeah, you have a big document, actually.
Oh, many. I had to separate all these things into different documents, and you know, mm-hmm. or like, oh, it could be cool to write a short story about a lot of, you know, so it can be, and little things will trigger that. And so I try to keep my environment neutral, but it can be difficult. I also have to leave reminders for myself because I do forget things. And the good news is normally you go back and you look at the stickies and you're like, that idea is actually not that. It'll be like a watch that sees color, right? And like, I don't know why I thought that was something, but that was clearly a stupid idea.
That's something that I find curious about you, because for everybody that I know but you, they like to have their studio or their work environment filled with work stuff, meaning, I don't know, like awards or certificates or things that remind them that they do something because of X reason, you know? And you're like the opposite. You want to hide all that stuff. And I never thought that would be like a noisy little thing while you, like, in your process.
Well, there's two things. I mean, yeah, it's very common for composers in Los Angeles, at least, to have the movie poster or whatever of the thing they worked on, like, mm-hmm. right next to their desk.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I remember I shared a studio with a composer named Dave Holden when we both had rooms at John Debney's place. And Dave had been an assistant to James Newton Howard earlier when he first came to L.A., and had helped out on the movie I Am Legend with Will Smith. And so he had a poster for I Am Legend, mm-hmm. like inches from his desk.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never do that. I never had posters. And then as soon as I got a studio big enough to have separate rooms, I put there's two things, like awards. Mm-hmm. I've been lucky to win some awards. And
some awards, you have like 50...
Well, whatever. But point is, I have a few little things.
I found stuff in your like closet. Like, it needs to be hanged.
Well, it's fine. Not hurting anybody. But in any case, so there's two different, like, posters I think of as a separate reason. It's not the same reason why I keep those in a separate room. Because the posters, like, I have a Journey poster that's signed by that game company. Okay. And I have an Abzu poster. And I have a, you know, Pathless and like the new fire team.
Yeah, you have the Holy Trinity in like one wall, which is Flow. No, wait.
I have a Flow poster. You also have a
Journey, Pathless, and Abzu. Uh-huh. The big posters with the signatures, and they look so nice.
Yeah, and I have like a, you know, Assassin's Creed poster that I never framed. And
no.
I just never framed it. It's for 5 years. It's been in a tube. And
that one's really pretty.
I have a Banner Saga one that was signed by every member of the orchestra. And
which image?
It's the only poster image. It's just the poster. It's like a specific painting for the poster.
Uh-huh, okay.
And we because of their Kickstarter, we brought like 1,000 of them to the recording session and had the orchestra members spend nice. Like 4 hours signing them all. Because they had like 20,000 backers that all got posters.
Yeah, for sure.
It was all drama, but point is, like, I don't like to put posters from past work near my workspace because it feels like it's a reminder of the past, and I'm trying to create the future. Like that, like it sounds very pretentious to say it like that, but I don't want to go, you know, like, look at all these cool projects I worked on. I could probably just duplicate that again. Like,
right.
You know, it's like I try to think of a blank page. Because like when I was working on Journey, you know, I guess I had done Flow and I had done some movies I'm proud of, but like, you know, it wasn't drawing on a body of work by and large, or Flow in particular. I was in college when I did Flow. And I always think I want to try to create the kind of purity that I had when I made those things where I sort of didn't know what I was doing. And all these posters of past work kind of remind me, they make me feel more like a grown-up and a professional. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to be a little bit more like an idiot teenager that sort of is experimenting with everything and doesn't know really right from wrong. And that, to me, is a more sort of creative environment.
I think even if you're wrong, but obviously that's not debatable. Like, you feel however you feel. But I think it's also healthy because even if you don't mind having the images there while you work, I feel like the, I don't want to say mind, your conscious is going to like pick up some of that at some point, and then somehow, I don't know, you might replicate it in the new work.
Yeah, and that's definitely the thing I'm trying to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's the reason why the posters and that sort of stuff I don't keep in my room. Yeah,
even if you don't try,
that might happen. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then awards and stuff is actually a separate consideration. There, it's more of like, you win an award. So let's say, this is the cycle. This is how I always thought about this. Let's say I've never won anything. I've never done anything. No one, and I work really hard from this place of total uncertainty. And then I make a thing and it does well. And because the whole time I'm going, I don't know if this is good. I don't know if people are going to like this. If it works, blah, 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 blah. Then it comes out, turns out people like it. Holy crap, that's exciting. And then maybe enough people like it within industry or voters or whatever, and like some organization gives you an award. And then it's like, holy crap, you know, I guess maybe I'm pretty good at this after all. And then what happens? The next blank page, you sit down and you go, I mean, I'm an award-winning composer. I probably whatever I do is pretty good, because they don't just give those awards to anybody.
Right, uh-huh.
So like, I don't need to double check my work maybe as much,
uh-huh,
because I should just have the confidence.
Right.
And to me, that's pure poison. Mm. Like that ruins the artistry immediately, because
right,
all the doubt and all the like critical thinking, mm-hmm, that got you there to win the award in the first place,
mm-hmm,
in a way was built from the fact that you didn't have the award. You hadn't proven anything.
Right.
And if you suddenly now let that award talk to you like the One Ring and the thing, and it's like, whoosh, 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 and it's convincing you like you're a genius.
Uh-huh.
All those processes break down. All the things, yeah, that made it great to begin with.
It's so easy to fall in that.
100%. It's the same if you're, it's actually quite similar to, you know, like you see these directors. It's everyone's hypothesis, I think, about M. Night Shyamalan, where he made this absolutely groundbreaking, amazing movie in The Sixth Sense. And then seemingly, he got quickly surrounded by people who just told him he's brilliant. And all of his movies started to get noticeably lower in quality and lower in quality.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I'm the guy that made The Sixth Sense, so I'm great. And it's like, yeah, but what made
it
great?
Is that actually what happened? Isn't it like,
it always,
maybe a very, like a coincidence, because, I don't know, depression or whatever, other
the thing problem. Is, he's made like 10 movies since then. None have anywhere been the quality. There have been, the first half of Signs, I think, is amazing. And I actually don't hate the back half. It's just clearly, it just gets a little cheesy.
Mm.
And, you know, I know that Unbreakable has its fans and the recent ones of Split and whatever. But like The Sixth Sense was like,
right,
it was a big deal. It was so good.
Yeah.
How many horror films make you cry at the end? I mean, it was so good. And
what was the like translation of the title of that movie?
Oh my God. So yeah, once my group of friends used to do these game nights, and the guy that always put it together, he would make Jeopardy categories, and he was very creative in his thinking of Jeopardy categories. And one of the categories was, name this movie based on its non-English speaking title translation. So it was like, it's such a genius, because you'd hear it and be like, I don't know what this is. And then you'd hear what it actually was.
I always wonder, why do they change the title? As a Spanish speaker, I always looked at the poster, and it's not even what the movie, like, it's just so bizarre that they change it. I don't understand.
Some person who works in marketing,
yeah,
who thinks they know how to appeal to the local market.
So, okay, which language was this?
So this was the Chinese,
uh-huh,
title, as the title. This was like, I think the like $1,000. This was like the top. The movie, it just said.
Did he actually give $1,000?
No, like 1,000 points or whatever. No. I mean, it was always for fun.
Those games.
Oh, it was. One of my favorite categories he ever did was name the movie based on this 2 seconds of footage of an explosion from somewhere in the movie.
Jesus.
And it was amazing how gettable it was. Like,
yeah,
because he chose these like iconic explosions.
Uh-huh.
Not like the Death Star, but it was like, you know, like a building or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I remember, I'll never forget, I saw the first one, I went, that's the opening of Demolition Man.
Nice.
And anyway, it was he had a real gift for this. It was, you know, we'd get big, like 30 people all yelling and
competing. Okay.
But yeah, the highest ranking name this movie, it was, I mean, we kind of blew it because you already knew the answer, but it was, the movie was called He's a Ghost. And that was, and then I remember it was like, I kept, and you thought, well, maybe it's Ghost. Like maybe it's literally the movie Ghost or something. And then, yeah, I'll never forget. It was Claire who went, is it the Sixth Sense?
She won?
She got that one.
I can't believe she got it.
She actually, I think, was the champion of that whole.
Wow.
Like, I feel like she somehow had this bizarre ability to, to like hear it and go, that's probably what they, I just remember blowing my mind that the twist, the single biggest shock twist, it was like, no one had made a movie with such an effective twist like that in a long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's why it became his whole thing. Again, that's taking us back to that initial subject of, it, now suddenly all of his movies had to have some twist, and it became a formula, and and all the genius that went into that movie felt like it became this routine, and all the movies suffered. Even with the good craftsmanship and these incredible one amazing James Newton Howard score after another, the greatest of which is from The Village. Holy crap. What a score that movie is for a movie that's otherwise fine.
Is that movie that you, like, people dress us with red color?
And yellow, yeah. Yellow, red is forbidden. Yes.
Oh, red is forbidden, yeah.
Yeah, that's with Bryce Dallas Howard and Adrian Brody and Joaquin Phoenix. And again, all of his movies start great. He does atmosphere so well. The Signs, the best, though. Like, the whole first half of that movie with the creepy crop circles and this, again, incredible James Newton Howard score. Anyway, so yeah, it felt, so to me, awards and accolades and things that, the things that you earned with like a pure heart, they can ruin your pure heart.
Yeah.
And so I would never keep those.
Nearby. I remember the first time I visited your studio, I was surprised by the fact that you didn't have anything of that stuff around, you know, your computer, because everybody does.
I get it.
So common. No, it's so, like, and it's okay. Like, you can feel proud of your work, and that might work for you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, like, I remember like a good example of a friend. I hope if he hears this, he doesn't feel called out. But John Robert Matz, won some Game Audio Network Guild awards and essentially would keep them effectively between him and his computer monitor. So he essentially is forced to look over them to work.
Uh-huh.
And the thing is, though, I was with him when he won his first ever award. I was sitting right next to him at the Game Audio Network Guild, and he exploded. I mean, you rarely could find someone with more genuine, humble, like...
That's his boost.
I was so happy for him because you could just feel that he felt like, I have worked so hard to come as far and for my colleagues to sort of notice me.
Of course.
You know, in a room where half the people in the room are like childhood heroes of his and whatever.
Yeah.
I got a lot of vicarious high that night. And so I can understand going home and being like, you know what? I'm fucking proud to have this thing.
Of course.
I'm going to put this right where I can look at it. You know, like, I totally get it. I just am wired really differently.
Yeah, you're a weirdo.
To me, I worry that I'm going to really...
No, that's good. That's a good way to do things as well. Just, okay, you did it. Great for you. Let's move on.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't really know what any of that has to do with taking vacations and recharging. But
it's it's a chill list. Yeah, I didn't plan anything. We didn't even... I normally like to have a little activity, you know, for us to do. But this time was
We can say our album of the day is Troy's Sitting in the Fire.
We could say that. I totally agree.
It's very nice, and it has a really beautiful... Yes. As a kind of like throwing a bone to the BioShock Infinite fans. Very last track is a really lovely, very atmospheric rendition of him singing Will the Circle Be Unbroken.
Oh, so pretty.
And so I'm more than happy to label that our album for whatever.
Sure. It works absolutely perfect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really nice work on that one, mixed by Rob King, as I mentioned. And But yeah, I do. Long and short of it is, I think people, for any fellow workaholic types, you're not weak for wanting to take time off. Or yeah, actually, absolutely. I can go one further. You're not weak for not wanting to take time off.
I was gonna turn it over and
Or it doesn't make you better to always. It really is a healthy thing to find ways to disconnect and recharge and just like have a life experience that's not related to anything that's seemingly relevant. You never know how it might serve you later. Uh-huh. And if it doesn't, that's okay.
I just think about it this way. If you, yes, you love your work, you work all day, every day, and you have to deliver and there's people counting on you. But what if you die tomorrow, what is going to be your memories? What is going to be your happy moments on this earth?
See, this is a bad one to ask me because my...
Oh, come on, Austin!
No, because my argument immediately flies in the opposite of everything we've been saying. Because I go, if I die tomorrow, I won't take my memories with me, but I will leave behind the work I did. So
Jesus Christ!
So I actually... That mentality is actually pretty... That's why... Because that feels very rational. Like, that's logical.
That's what I'm so like, because it makes sense. Yes, I understand completely.
But that's where I recognize, like, you can't let the fact that that's a logically coherent argument convince you that these moments are... Here's the version of it that I think you're going for. If I alone die tomorrow, you're probably better off with the memory of this trip than the work I otherwise would have done.
Of course, because
so it's for your benefit mine.
Yeah, that is strange to me. That is like, it's not my area. It's not like I'm not involved in any.
Yeah. So for the sake of your families, your loved ones, your kids, your parents, whoever you would take a vacation with, or even just go spend time with, like I always think of that really charming comedians in cars getting coffee with Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner, who are like these two old, like it's like The Odd Couple with Walter Matthau, where they're like just sitting there with their little TV trays watching sitcoms, like these old retirees, like they're comedic legends, and they're in like this apartment watching making these memories just hanging together. And you know, that missing that time, it doesn't have to be some indulgent vacation. It can be just having a coffee with somebody, and enjoying that, recognizing that memory for that person can persist after your death. And that could be all the justification that you need. It's easy for me to argue in favor of it. But I mean, I do think that I think the idea of, I mean, this is why so many artists refer to their work as like their kids. You know, you go, what's your favorite? People ask me like, what's your favorite piece of music you wrote? And it's like, that is like if I had 5 kids and you said, which one's your favorite?
Oh, come on. They always have a favorite.
Well, in that case, I'm a better parent then, because I don't, I really don't. I feel like the moment I find myself going, this one's my favorite. I've had moments on projects where it's not finished, and I go, this is feeling like the best one. So how do I make the others better as a result? Uh-huh. You know, like, because I don't want that. I want it to feel like this whole thing feels, because I look at something like West Side Story and I go, every song is an A+ song. Mm-hmm. There's, how do you pick a favorite? Although my favorite is Cool. Mm-hmm. I love that one. Hey, boy. Oh, it's the best. It's just
this is so lame. I'm trying to.
Your snaps are.
I'm sweating, I guess. It's actually pretty warm in here.
Yeah, I think sitting by the computer is not helping. We're just literally on the floor.
We're next to the fireplace.
Yeah, we have the laptop propped up on the little mantle of the fireplace, and the like this book thing that has the cabin like information in it.
Yeah.
Is what we have the microphone on between us so we can.
Yeah.
Because there was only one outlet that our computer could plug into, because none of the outlets in this house for some reason have the third prong for the the grounding stick thing, the grounding, I can't remember what that's called, but the third one that's just there for grounding. They're all just the two prong. So we were like, well, I guess we're recording on the floor. Anyway, so our album is Troy's. Enjoy life. Enjoy Don't life. Feel bad about it. Big Bear for anybody that wants to try it.
Oh yeah,
five on star.
Winter. Let's do it in winter.
Well, you're especially you've yet to experience like a real true snowy winter.
Oh my god!
Growing up near the equator,
I can't believe I have fucking 4 years living here and I haven't touched the snow, Austin.
Half the time you've been here was in the pandemic, so.
I know. I guess it doesn't count, but still.
Yeah. And. And also, California, not known for its winters.
I know, but still.
It is, the fact that you can come here.
That's though, crazy. I didn't know that.
That's why California is famous, that you can ski and surf in the same day. You could literally, you could wake up here, ski in the morning.
Yep.
Drive, you know,
Afternoon. 3 hours.
Yeah, by afternoon, be at the ocean. There's very few places in the world where you can do that.
We should go skating at Venice.
Tomorrow. That's all. That's all you. Anyway, so that's Brushes and Keys. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Hopefully, this wasn't too meandering.
It's a little messy, but this is all about just be chill. Just enjoy life whatever.
We're living our message.
Excellent. Thank you so much, guys. You know, you can write at Brushes and Keys on Twitter and Instagram, and we see you there. Thank you.